The image of the Arab world has changed dramatically over the last few years. We know it is ancient. We know it's rooted in history and historical context. But the identity of Arabs has been tainted by media, by recent histories, and most importantly, by our own sense of difference, and thus a sense of inaccessibility. San Francisco Camera Work, a gallery situated in an inconspicuous building in downtown San Francisco, currently has an exhibition titled Not Given, talking of and around photographs of Arab women. The collection of photographs we see is drawn from the Arab Image Foundation, a foundation based in Beirut, Lebanon, and an organization that has meticulously collected images taken by and of Arab peoples. The foundation not only has collected these images, but has categorized them in a very distinctive and conscious manner, giving tags to each image: woman, man, Thai, street. Isabel Massou and Dori Bowen are the curators of Not Given. They have selected certain images from specific tags. In one case, images that were tagged disguise. As Dori states, those images seem to embody all that they were looking for, that which cannot be classified, the mysterious, the unknown. What we are faced with is images that may seem shocking to the Occidental viewer. Arab women kissing on the lips. Arab women getting married. Arab women standing naked, looking at the camera. Nearly all the images we see have been taken in a studio setting. And one is curious about what this term disguise really means. The images are not sordid. In fact, there's a sense of playfulness, a definite sense of disguise. However, they are provocative because they put into question not only our assumptions about Arab culture, but our identity of Arab women in particular. I spoke with Isabel and Dori when they were here in San Francisco, and today on Sight Unseen, you will hear part one of my interview with them. Isabel and Dori shuffle their time between America and France. They're a couple. Dori is from America and Isabel from France. That will be the way you can distinguish them in this interview. Their accents are a dead giveaway. I wondered what their perceptions of Arab women were before they approached this show. Isabel, the first voice you hear, shares how fluid that image is for her. Stay tuned.
I don't think there's only one thing or a few things or many things, or it just changes each time. I think I don't think of Arab women at large as in the same manner that I don't think as European women at large or American women at large. And especially, I would say even more so since a lot of my friends are from North Africa. And now living in a state from, second generation Lebanese or Palestinian. So I have met along my journey in my life a very broad range of Arab women. You know, I was born in the 60s, and then France was there was the Algerian independence in the 60s, and then a big wave of immigrants came to France in the 70s, and it was at the same time that I moved to the suburb. We call it the suburb, but it's like here, I think it's the equivalent. Well, how would you call it here? I guess the ghetto. and then I was, a little white kid coming from Paris, and then put right away in a big, tower with a lot of people. Everybody was immigrants, and then mainly Arab family. So that's how it started up to like today, or like even 2 years ago, going to Beirut with another kind of like, aspect of the Arab world. So I really don't have one image. I have images of, I could say that I have more if there is a differentiation maybe of between, North Africa and then Middle East. That would be my only, I would say to you, what Arab woman are you talking about? Which part are you talking about then if I had,
And you, Dori?
For me, I have less of an identification, and it's something that's come up. People have asked me, so what was your image of Arab women? And I actually have to say I didn't have one. And I think part of the reason is that in the States, I don't think it's as much a topic. Maybe issues of race here would revolve around black and white. And so the image of Arab, non-Arab, Western, Eastern don't play in the same way they do in France. And that's what was really intriguing but bizarre to me about this image of the woman with the veil. And that I saw, the more that I studied it, that it was historical. It was really weighted with the history of France and Algeria and of course, the colonies and the idea of the Middle East as being an extension of France or things of that sort. And so I don't think I really had that kind of connection. I'd say my only connection would be a sort of parallel connection, which is being Jewish and living in the States. I've always felt somewhat not from here. And people would say, you know, as if they knew what that is, so you're Jewish. And I would say, but they're, you know, Sephardic, Ashkenazic from different parts of the world, different relationships to that background. And I felt that kind of marginalization of being from somewhere, but not, or not being seen as one of the people of that country, always made an exception. So I understood it maybe in that parallel way that the French Arabs are French, and yet they're not considered completely French.
Very much can be said about the Lebanese Arabs too, because Lebanon was a French colony, and I think that there's all this at least in my own family, there's this confusion as to whether you're French because that's the language you speak and that's the education you have, or whether you're Arab because that's where you were born, or in my case, whether you're Armenian because that's your where your blood is. I generally don't answer my own questions, but to answer that particular question is, when I think of Arab woman, I definitely think of a need to be, or a constraint to be, conservative and restrained as a woman, even though there's a burning heat that is just bubbling under the surface. And I think that that's one of the reasons why there's a great attraction to this show, at least for me, is that you see women unrestrained. And then just kind of want to start talking about that element of lack of restraint.
Well, I'm wondering what you're talking exactly about. Is what made you feel like it was this feeling of unrestraint? What, you know?
What made me feel it? The two women kissing. I mean, certain images made me feel that, you know, two women kissing, two women acting out the role of what a man and a woman would act out, like getting married, or a woman dressing up as a man, when a woman's role and a man's role in Arab culture is extraordinarily clear, as it is in many cultures, but particularly in the Arab one. Well, I shouldn't say particularly, but since we're focusing on it.
Well, definitely that's, you know, we focused on one part of the exhibit, which is the way that the whole database is viewed online, is through category and keywords. So we actually stop ourselves onto a word that we really like, which was the word disguise. And in this, obviously, there is a lot of this kind of, you know, unrestraining, you say. But at the same time, we didn't want to expose or say, okay, here we are going to show you homosexual, you know, or a certain image of the Arab world that you would not see otherwise. And then we an outing out type of, you know, thing. It was more because actually I think that the whole complexity is also in the Arab world, and that I can say for sure in both Middle East and North Africa, is that the way that people live their homosexuality there is very, very different than the way we do, and there is not one better than the other. It's just different. And I think it's just about not saying things, you know. It's a lot about like things everybody knows about it, you know, but you know, it's not like out like here. So those images were kind of funny because at the same time, nobody, and even in the journal, you know, Tarek never really actually talks about, you know, say the word homosexuality. And no one says it, but it's like what was interesting for us is that with our eyes of Occidental, you know, and also of, you know, gay women, we see them as being homosexual image. And then, you know, it's interesting that then we have some codes that apply, that we can apply to a certain image and say, oh, this woman, she's gay. She has to be gay. Why is she under disguise? You know, therefore. So that's, you know, the restraining aspect could be something that is viewed through our eyes, but those images are actually, some of them are just like, you know, set up for portrait photography that were made during that time because a man and a woman couldn't go in the same studio together. So therefore it was like, you know, acting out by two men. Or two women, the kiss, you know, or like the people getting married, the two men getting married. They are viewed as actually like, you know, portraying heterosexual, you know, activity, I guess.
I think Tarek made some interesting points in his essay about this group of photographs, which all come from the studio of Hashem El Madani from Saida, Lebanon, and he from the 50s, and he talks about how the photographer was a part of, orchestrated it, and he looks at how the photographer sort of created a space where certain things could be acted out, and that it was as much about acting out as it was a woman with a woman or a man with a man, but acting out certain desires or fantasies, and he also relates it to film scenarios. And it's interesting to think of the studio as this privileged site where certain scenes could be, and I think Madani actually calls them sessions, certain sessions where things could be acted out in, maybe in opposition to or in addition to the cultural mores of that fairly conservative town. So I think that's an interesting commentary on photography as well, and studio photography, and maybe the small studio as opposed to like the large, well-known studios that in small towns, perhaps studios can function as a place where people can try out different identities, which we're calling, because they fall under the keyword in the archive, disguise.
Well, I think that is precisely it. I think it's this you know, this chance to really act something out. Because I didn't look at that picture of the two women kissing and think that they were gay. I thought that they're exploring something, not necessarily something sexual, maybe something that they've seen, because it's not necessarily a passionate embrace. It's tentative, but it's present. I mean, it's just an interesting image, and you don't immediately think sexuality. You do think playfulness and that element of disguise. And you, Dori, had said that disguise in Arabic, doesn't necessarily mean disguise.
Right. The way that Tarek El-Aris defines it in his essay is that it means a disowning of what he calls almost the social persona for another persona. So it would be a displacement of identity. And he says it's for the sake of another or for the sake of someone else. So that brings it back to an issue of shame and also social mores, personas, and what can be shown and what can be put aside or must be put aside to show something else. So it really becomes more of a shell game rather than the authentic self and the fake self. It becomes an issue of what can be shown and to whom. And I think that's why he also reads the photographer into this, that it's many of these photographs seem to be geared toward the photographer, and he puts him in the place as the witness, that he's almost officiating over these mock marriages and in a sense then creating a kind of marriage with these sessions and trying out these various kinds of identities. So it's interesting if we think of the marriage as something that's a social act with a witness, that the photographer stands in as that witness for these acts. That was also brings up an interesting topic, which we address in the show, which is translation. So that in Arabic it means one thing, and Isabel and I have talked about how in French, déguisé has a certain connotation, and in English, disguise, and déguisé, and correct me if I'm wrong, is something of a like dressing up. And in English, disguise has something of an undertone, a connotation of trickery or mendacity. There's something that's underhanded. So that's interesting to think also about when they use that term to disguise to describe these photos. They may not have meant what we think they mean in English, which is that there's something underhanded, but simply that it was a kind of persona, a kind of acting for the camera that can't be read as the authentic self, but something else was going on. And so we tried to bring that theme of translation into the show by foregrounding this one set of images under disguise, which is about translation, about the slippery aspects of the archive, that it seems very ordered, but when you dig underneath a little bit, you realize that these terms are being translated from French to English, sometimes through Arabic or sometimes through another language, and that it's not clearly defined, and that there's a lot of overlap or confusion in the archive. So we wanted to foreground that as a theme.
Why disguise? What was it that attracted you about the term disguise, of all the keywords that Arab Image Foundation came up with?
I think it's not really the word disguise. It's actually like, because I happened to fall onto some picture of women that were beautiful and and disguised, quote, and you know, in the sense of like dress up as men. I mean, like the one that are in the show right now, there is one. It actually started with Marguerite, this particular image that both Dory and I just loved right away, and then actually wrote a grant with that image on the front, and then it kind of follow us. And it's an image of a woman who actually at first we thought was a man, and like very 50 look it's in Palestine, I think. Marguerite, yeah, I think it's in Palestine. But hanging onto like a wall with a cigarette in her mouth, and then with a tie and then a suit, and very masculine attitude, very boyish, but very also seductive. So I think it was, you know, the disguise word in itself didn't make sense, because for me it was more, she was too well disguised to be disguised, let's put it that way. And, you know, it's the kind of, I mean, I think you have something in your country that you call the gaydar. You know, I learned that word recently. And, you know, I have it. So, and even in photography, I feel like I can have it. And it's like, oh, you know, I mean, but then she was just a gorgeous woman, really, really sexy and very stylish. So then we looked at the keywords attached to this, you know, photograph. And that's when, of course, there was just the basic keywords that one, you know, could fall upon, which was like tie, you know, cigarette and suits. And then there was disguise. And disguise was just so odd, you know, to be there, because it's like, okay, so let's see. The archivist is wondering where they're going to put this. There was, of course, the word woman. You know, but it's also like, okay, so how is this person is going to think about this image in terms of like where to put it? You know, it's a woman, of course, but then she's like dress up, but then it's like, so, okay, she's disguised, you know, and so we actually met the archivist Tamara Sawaya in Beirut, and she's a very wonderful woman that we really had a good time working with. And we talked, Dory talked more than me actually about that with her.
Well, I also think that the keyword disguise is interesting in that it sets up all the problems that we wanted to address in the show, which is it suggests that it's an issue of interpretation, because disguise somehow, I think, includes the viewer in the term, because disguise for whom? And that became an issue for us in terms of cultural translation, trying to understand, is this a cultural phenomenon, something that we might read differently in Lebanon than we'd read here? Are these images understood one way or another way? And so the term disguise seems a way of almost acknowledging this issue of interpretation that maybe comes up over sexuality, but also could come up over class or race, and that the archive is interpreting and is giving a structure. And here, in this case, with disguise, it's almost as if the archive is saying, well, it's not what you think it is, and that's all we'll tell you. We're not going to attach another term to it to define it, but we'll say that we won't define it. And so we thought, well, it would be really interesting to take all the terms that, we didn't take all of them, but choose terms that fall under disguise to thematize this issue of archival interpretation, of how they try to frame, because of course you reach the images through the words, and that's what we're getting at with the show, is that this sort of branching structure that the archive uses to order these images is how you come to the images and therefore is the logic of the archive. But then there's this placeholder called disguise where they just lump things that they don't want to attach words to, or not, maybe not too specifically. So we thought, well, that's the perfect category to thematize, because what it's saying is we're not going to say.
Yeah. Well, it allows for that mystery that is so attractive. And it allows for expansiveness as well, since it can't be so pointed as, say, woman or as, say, Thai. So tell me about some of the other images that kind of struck you.
Well, this photograph, let's see, this is one by Hashem El-Madani, and it is of two women. And what's interesting about it is that one's wearing a full bridal gown and veil, and the other is just in sort of regular street clothes, but the gazes are really fascinating because they're orchestrating it for the camera. And the woman who's holding back the veil as if she's going to kiss the bride is looking toward the camera as well. And I think it really illustrates the way this is a session for the camera and raises a lot of issues about the purpose of studio photography in this small town, that they were orchestrating this moment as if the camera had to see the bride being unveiled. And the woman is a prop, in a sense, in this process, that it's about the unveiling and the camera witnessing that. So it raises a lot of interesting questions to me about the purpose of photography and in relationship to marriage, social customs, that this had to be documented. Whether, I don't know if it is, in fact, because a man couldn't enact that, if that was not permissible, but it doesn't even seem to be the issue. The issue seems to be capturing this unveiling for the camera, this mock unveiling, because she's not the fresh bride. I mean, not in terms of her looks, but because you can tell this is actually being orchestrated. So it's something like we have to get a sense of the witnessing of the bride and the bride's unveiling. So I think that's kind of interesting.
It's interesting, the narrative that you create when you have a photograph before you, just the whole fantasy element of it that you create for yourself about that moment and what might have been going on for those women. Do you think if you were to attribute emotions to how those women are feeling, what emotions would you attribute to them?
I sense that they're enacting something necessary, that in order to be a bride, it's not simply looking like a bride, but it's this act of unveiling may be in fact what being a bride is. And so this might be just as essential to the process of marriage as having the right dress and having the right configuration of people and the music, et cetera, and the ritual. But this almost seems to be essential. Like they're capturing something that has to be there in order for a marriage to take place. I feel like they're illustrating it for us, this unveiling, which implies that she was veiled and so protected and secure, and that she's being unveiled, but a mock unveiling. And that's what's really interesting and strange about it, is that everyone involved is aware that this is being enacted in a ritualistic fashion and it's not a real unveiling. So what unveiling means then becomes open. Is that the consummation of the marriage? And that's what they're enacting for us so that she can have a record of that? It's sort of an open question to me.
The woman on the left, the unveiler, seems particularly strong.
There is this kind of passive and active, you know, type of feeling into it. It's almost like the woman who is unveiling the other one, it could be like the sister or the assistant of the photographer, actually. You know, that there is like, in her look, she said to him, "Is that okay? Are you seeing her well?" You know. And it's almost like she has more relationship to the photographer than to the woman that she's touching, you know? And I feel like there is this kind of... the position of the woman who is being unveiled has this kind of Virgin Mary type of look, very angelic and very innocent, you know, and very... she's going to let this whole thing happen, and then whatever they're going to do it, you know?
Okay, so let's go on to another picture that you really love.
Well, I wrote quite a bit about this one. So I became fixated on this image. And I'm not sure why. It's one that most of the images are portraits. But there are a number of snapshots as well. And I became kind of intrigued by the snapshot quality, particularly since in this case, the photographer seems to be the fourth person. So it includes you in as the viewer into this. I feel like when I stand in front of it, I'm the fourth element. It's a tripod and I'm the fourth leg. And everyone's looking at me except for this one woman who's kind of looking away and towards the camera. So I was also intrigued by their outfits. It seemed kind of formal, and the two women are wearing somewhat similar dresses, and the man on the left's wearing a white starched shirt. So there's a lot of black and white and as a theme going around with the sky, which is white, and the terrain behind, which is dark. So I started to really think about this woman in the center and how usually we edit out those photographs where someone blinks. But for me, she became this pivot point because she's this translator figure. She's not looking at me, but she's not looking away. And so she's caught in this act of looking toward and away. And that's how I started to think about the exhibition as a whole, that it was what we were trying to do was to get people to look at the photographs and look away and see the after image and see what it is they see. So that's why we used her in the entryway or this photograph and then a white square block next to it with the instructions to look at the photograph and look away. And it was that process of looking and looking away that I wanted to encourage in the viewer to think about these photographs, this archive, the Middle East, Arab women, but also to think about looking and their looking and how the act of looking inscribes the photographs with imagination and gives them vitality. So to somehow bring that process into the exhibition as well.
Those were the voices of Isabel Massu and Dori Bowen, curators of the exhibition Not Given, talking of and around photographs of Arab women. The exhibition traveled from Marseille to San Francisco and will be at SF Camera Work through May 26th. To learn more about the exhibition, please visit sfcamerawork.org. My name is Tani Katenjian, and you're listening to Sight Unseen. Stay tuned for more great programming on Resonance 104.4 FM, the UK's first radio art station.